Big Pat Peck Nissan for your next vehicle. Shop over 500 new Nissans at the only Nissan dealer in Gulfport. Right now, buy a new 2020 Rogue S for $24,074. Visit us on US 49 in Gulfport and drive home your new Nissan today. Shop our complete inventory online at patpacknissan.com. VIN LC724100, MSRP 28,180, includes 1606, dealer discount and 2,500 Nissan customer cash. Tax, title, and fees extra. See dealer for details. N3220. Big Pat Peck Nissan for your next vehicle. Shop over 500 new Nissans at the only Nissan dealer in Gulfport. Right now, buy a new 2020 Rogue S for $24,074. Visit us on US 49 in Gulfport and drive home your new Nissan today. Shop our complete inventory online at patpacknissan.com. VIN LC724100, MSRP 28,180, includes 1606, dealer discount and 2,500 Nissan customer cash. Tax, title, and fees extra. See dealer for details. N3220.
Hi, everybody. I'm Derek Weisgott-Kellogg. Welcome to Between Two Worlds Radio on the UPRN Radio Network. I'm here in the studio. I'm slowly playing catch-up right now. I'm going to just close my door.
Okay, I'm back. Anyways.
Yeah. Thank everybody for actually joining us and joining me. Right now, I'm working on getting my studio all figured out. I got a brand new computer now and trying to get all that worked out. And I've been busy traveling and went to Nevada. So, and that's going to be another one in itself too. So that's going to be busy for me. Anyways, I just got back from Nevada and I'm looking forward to talk to you all about what happened up there. Tonight actually, or I would say it was actually on, the date was when I was gone. Let's see. I was actually left here Monday on the 17th and I just got back, on the 22nd. So that's how busy I was. So I'm actually here. And so actually I'm here talking about the UFO conference that I was actually up in Laughlin, Nevada. It was one hell of a turnout. It was, as far as I'm concerned, it was great. I mean, I loved it. And there was a lot of people that were involved that I want to thank also for being part of it. Johnny Enoch is the one that actually encouraged me to go and to do a presentation because of myself. When I was a young kid, I was actually taken on the UFO. And that happened back in 1967 when I was like 11 years old. How I know that is because I end up going out. I was actually taken from my house inside to outdoors, and that's how I got. I'm not gonna say that we're abducted because I didn't feel like I was tortured or, you know, painful. That's not what happened to me. The people were kind to me on the ship, and they look like human beings like us. And they're not military back then. The military was never involved. Like, again, think about 1967, folks. And there was actually a fellow who actually was taken. Not taken, so to say. He got burned accidentally by one of the spaceships up in Falcon Lake, up in Manitoba. And that's where I lived, was in Manitoba, in Brandon. And right around the same time now, to tell the story, I'll give you guys a bit of an update what happened myself as a kid. I mean, like I said, I didn't remember even waking up. I really didn't. And so when I stood there by the window and looking out the window, I could see this look like I called a spaceship because it was levitating, you know, hovering above the skies. And I saw it. And so, you know, as a kid, you're going like, oh, wow, this is cool. What is that? You know, looking. And when I was a kid, we never had TV in our house. My dad and mom, you know, we were just getting into the idea of having a television set, but it never happened yet until long after. So, I mean, the only way I would know as being a spaceship, so to speak, is because we, as kids, would hear stories or comic books, that sort of thing. And that's where it started. And then from there, it got to another place where I was standing at the window, like I said, was looking out the window. And next thing you know, I'm outside my house on my front lawn. My feet were wet. I couldn't figure out how I got outdoors. I really don't know, even to this day. I remember looking out, and I remember out, and the next thing you know, I'm outside. But what I do remember is when I was standing outside, and I came back into the house because the ship wasn't there anymore, but I'm still looking up in the sky. So I walked back in the house, and I asked my parents, you know, like, Mom, you know, like, I saw a spaceship. And knowing parents, just waking, sort of like you're trying to get them to wake and tell, and you tell the story, and you're excited. Like, I saw a spaceship. And next thing you know, end up being where parents tell you, my mother told me, she said, go back to bed. You know, it's to go back to bed. Get, you know, go back to sleep. Because this is around 6 a.m. is when I remember. And I remember seeing the clock at first. It was like 5. And then the next thing you know, it's 6 o'clock. So it's pretty crazy. Anyways, from there, I didn't say much until breakfast. You know, my dad got up and he got dressed and went to work. Mom was making breakfast for us kids. And from there, at dinner, or at dinner, at breakfast, my mother was preparing breakfast, and I told her still about my having to see a spaceship. And my mom said, okay, well, let's not talk about that right now. And she said, let's focus on something else. And then what she did is, you want to come with me downtown? We're going to go do some shopping. I said, sure. Now, my mom didn't have a car, so we took a bus. Now, you got to think about this, folks. 1967 is different compared to, 1977, 1987, 1997. And we took the bus, and I got into the bus, and my mom, I sat right next, or up next across my mom. My mom sat down behind the bus driver, and I was across from her. She, the bus driver himself has actually taken a few minute break, and so he decided to turn on his transistor radio. Yes, folks, transistor radio. And he laid it on top of his panel, and he listened to it, turned the news up, and they said on the news that, and I'll never forget this day, there was well over 1,000 phone calls of UFO sightings that morning. So my mom looked back at me and she's like, oh my God, I guess, you know, I believe you now, right? In a matter of the next couple of days, which I did not know anything about this until after, many, many years later, there was a man up in Falcon Lake in Manitoba who actually had seen two UFOs, and one landed not too far from him. This fellow here actually was a genealogist. So actually he was looking for silver and other kinds of stones as well. And he apparently, when he saw one of the ships land, he walked up to it. Now, knowingly, he thought it belonged to the military or something of special. So he went with that. And when he walked up to it, he just noticed that when he walked up to the spaceship, and it was about 40 feet in diameter and about 30 somewhat feet tall, so to speak. Anyways, he saw the door open and he's about to walk to, like, he heard a couple, heard some people talking in a way, some voices. And he walked towards the doorway, in towards the doorway, and he said, hello. And he went there. Then they stopped talking. The door immediately closed and it started to lift itself up really quickly into the sky. Well, for some reason, whatever exhaust came from it was so extremely hot. He wore a hat and he wore these heavy-duty miner's gloves. And he's just a regular person, like I said, being out there. And he had your typical tweed shirt. He got burned from the exhaust from the spaceship. Now, not exhaust as in one single pipe. It looked like perforated holes, like you're looking at little holes in the screen. And that's where it came out, and it took off straight up into the sky. So he was actually burnt, and his whole chest was burnt. Looked like a grid, you know, like little dots of grid. And that's where it started. Now, I didn't pay too much attention to, because I mean, as a kid 11 years old, you don't think about anything more than that, than what it was. I remember my mom talking about it later on through the years, people saying about this man being burnt by a so-called spaceship, and the police investigated it, the military were involved, the research station was involved, like the doctors, the whole nine yards. Like, it was crazy. The man did recover, For many years, he would tell the story, and then it passed down later and through the years that was his son decided to carry on the same story. It became one of the most controversial stories ever, that they decided to make a coin out of it, and that it glows in the dark. Yeah, to basically acknowledge the man that actually was on the ship that got burnt. And so basically, he was a person that made contact. And I don't know much more about him. All I know is it was quite a story. And that carried on through the years of my life, where I became more involved in the UFO stuff later on through the years. And I mean, I was just as a kid growing up, I didn't really pay much attention to it until I had my experience. And my experience started back in 2001, 2002. But I really didn't pay much attention to it at first, like thinking, oh, it's no big deal. That's it, right? He left it at that. But I mean, myself being abducted, I was not abducted, because, you know, abducting means they take you. But I mean, I volunteered to go because they asked me if I wanted to go on the ship. And the cool part was, these are very tall beings. These are people that actually were not 8, 9, 10 feet tall, wearing long white, you know, outfits, and they had this big oval white helmet, and they looked like an alien, so to speak. Little like that guy. Okay. So that's what he looked like. But in a way, that's what their helmet looked like. A little more oval in the bottom, but it was white. And it had a little space in the center down below, I guess, because they need to talk. But when I was approached by these guys, they knew my name, and they asked me if I want to go for a ride. Like, yeah, hi, Derek, how are you doing? You want to go for a ride? Sure. You know, but how that happened, how they met me, is because I saw a big, huge, shining light in my window of my house. And that's where I was woken by that shining light. My wife woke up too and watched. And so I asked her if she wanted to come along, and she says, no, no, you guys go have fun. You know, so I left, and I was with them on the ship. Now, the ship that I went on is very similar, 40 feet in around their diameter, but it was a small one. We all went on there, and then they went from the small ship to the larger one that was about, it was actually in the clouds. It looked like, and I asked them how big it was, and they said, well, in your terms, it looked like it's 3 football fields big, wide, and it has many people on it, like thousands and thousands of people living on it, as well as working on it. So I got to travel with it. And they took me all the way up to their planet. It wasn't just go for a ride on the ship and then, you know, there you go, and then you come back. I got to experience it. I got to experience it, and they asked me if I want to go to their planet. I said, sure, I'd love to. And so they took me through. I said, well, how do we get through there? How quickly? And they said, you see those little 3 stars there? They're all lined up. And I said, yeah. And they said, that's called Orion's Belt. We go right through it. That's a portal. And that's what they did. They went right through that belt. And I was like, gone in through there. I'm watching the Earth behind me. It looked really cool, right? And they said, there's your Earth. Gone that fast. You know, time was quick. But it was cool. I wasn't scared. And then through my trip, while they're traveling, and then I actually went through my examinations and checking me out. And I've seen a lot of things that I observed from it. When I came into one of the rooms, there were people laying inside this, looks like a giant silvery vat, and it's about 3 feet in height, but it's all stainless steel looking in a way. And there are 3 people laying inside, and they're sitting back there as if you're having a sauna, so to speak. But they look like this muddy, brown, liquidy stuff in it. And I asked them what it was. And they said it's actually a healing solution that they use to cure. And that word cure, the people that actually were quite sick. And there actually were from our Earth. And apparently they were actually helping us, or helping them, be messengers as well. And so they're curing them. And I'm thinking, oh, that's cool. So I learned from them what they showed me. And I said, do we have this sort of thing on our planet? And they said, no, it's actually, it was developed on their planet and by their scientists, but they've developed it thousands of years ago and they use it all the time. If you want to be cured, that's what they would use. They would talk about using it. And if I was dealing with a certain sickness, that I'd be laying inside of it and it would actually take the sickness out of you. That's what it does. That's how, and I said, well, how long do you guys live till? And they said, we can live for thousands of years or we can live for 1,000 years. And the people that were living, that were with them on the ship, most of them are living for about 1,000 years. So lifespan is 1,000 years. I said, cool. Like, how come we can't live for 1,000 years? And they said, you can. But for some reason, whatever we did, we became selfish and greedy. And we lost that ability to live longer because we became too selfish, too, I don't know what else that's added into it, but there are lessons to be learned from it. And it came from humankind from a long, long time ago. It wasn't us like as in today. This happened thousands of years ago on our planet Earth. But they were also involved with the African parts of the world are also involved in Egypt. Egypt was one of the major landing sites, and they did a lot of science there. They also were in other parts of the world, like Peru, Mexico, you name it. I mean, pretty well China, Japan. And they've also done a lot of work with different kinds of people across other parts of the world. They help create us, is what they said. We are their creation. They gave us the intelligence if we want to. They've been teaching us all this time. And I mean, there's a huge life experience in this. But when I was at the conference, Johnny, I want to thank Johnny Enoch for this, but when I was at the conference, and Bob Brown, because those are the guys that put it on. It was actually called the UFO Mega Conference, and it was held in Laughlin, Nevada. And I was there for 6 days. I was totally blown away. I mean, I was in a place where I didn't feel like I was the only one in the room. And there were so many experiencers, UFO experiencers. There were so many people that went through different types of things that happened to them in their journey. And I fit in. I felt like I was like, wow, I finally fit into a place. And I was so well respected. I really enjoyed my time being there. And I wanted to share this with you guys and let you know that it was the most fun I've ever had. What I got to do too, have fun, and when some of the people did not know that I did use some of my psychic skills there, my mediumship. And Johnny sort of hinted out there. And so I had a lot of people approach me regarding doing some readings for them. And I did a little bit of a demonstration. And I'm glad that they actually did approach me and made some new connections. But I had a lot of fun. What was really interesting about Laughlin, Nevada, we also did some sky watching at night. And I did record. I actually got to use some night glasses, night watching glasses, which are, they look kind of green to find the UFOs flying across the skies at night. And what I did is it was a single eye piece, and I put it on my cell phone, and I can see it through my cell phone. It was really cool. I had a lot of fun doing that, and I recorded it at the same time. And you get to go to my Facebook page. You can have a look and see what you think. I had a lot of fun doing it. I want to thank everybody for joining me also in the Facebook chat room, because I'm actually on Facebook Live too. UPRN Radio Network is one of the most phenomenal stations that I've I like working with. Joe Montaldo is a really nice, super nice guy, and he's been patient with me because I'm trying to get my life into order, so to speak, because I've one of my computer screens just crashed Well, after I got here and I was trying to set up some new things, I got a brand new computer, about to set that up, and then there are some not compatibilities in the back, so now I gotta find some converters to fit all the back things, and so it's gonna take a while, but once I'm getting get everything all set up, my studio is gonna be rocking and it's gonna do quite well. I'm upgrading everything like I have. I mean, when I started out doing radio, internet radio was back in 2003, and that's where it started. And I did do internet radio. I had a lot of, I'm still actually to this day, I have a lot of fun doing it. But the computer I had back then is all custom built. Like I didn't want to buy anything off the shelf. I try to get in and install as much as they possibly can, RAM, you name it, space, so that I can run shows. And I also tried to see if I can do in studio live, where they can, a camera can be on me and where people can see what I do. And we were trying to do that at the time where it wasn't even fully developed yet. I mean, basically you could take a camera and you can try and get your audio sound from your speakers in the studio and having to get people to phone in. That's what we did back in 2003. I mean, it's been a while back now. 17 years. That's what I've been doing. I've been trying to see if I can, like, I'm a little ahead of my time at times. But there's a lot of us that were trying to do that. I mean, even the late Art Bell tried to do that. I myself tried to do that. And there's a few other guys we tried to do the same thing. And even guys from other radio stations that are internet radio was just getting out back then. We were trying to do things Facebook Live, or do not Facebook Live, but live in the studio, or even at least that were recorded. And now we are here. I mean, basically now we have different kinds of availabilities of other kinds of social networks that now want that are giving us opportunity to be live in the studio. The only thing I don't mind, I don't care for, is where some of the companies don't like you talking about certain things about where there's politics or gets too truth, too sensitive, and then they want to shut us off. That we don't have free speech. I don't care if you're in the US or Canada or across the world. That has happened. There have been people at their companies that actually say, nope, we don't want you to talk about this. Shh, cut you out. And they'll try to glitch it. And sometimes I remember years ago, they used to knock out Skype. If you got two, because there are people listening in that were, that when Skype got bought out by another company and then they were listening to us, and if we were talking too sensitive about certain things, whether it's all to do with extraterrestrials, you name it. I mean, I'm sure Joe could be, most likely would agree, or anyone else would agree. We've all had that situation where we had Skype knock us, where they'll say nope, and they'll just hang us up. So automatically we lose the connection. But if you talk about something else that's crazy that nobody makes a big deal about, Skype, great. But you can tell, And I'm not talking about just Skype alone, but even the other new phone lines, they have a tendency of wanting to not let us share our stories. So what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to do is I want to get with my this other show I have here, Between Two Worlds Radio. I've been doing it for the past, oh my God, 20 years. 20 years on internet radio. Like it's, no, don't take it back. Take it back. 20, 18 years. But we started back in 2002, 2002, 2003. The original company that took me in, that asked me to be part of it, was the BBS Radio, and they're one of the beginning of the pioneers of those folks. They used to help. They wanted me to be part of this, and there was a few other stations that I worked with, Dark Plains Radio, a few other guys that are still in the radio industry, the Good Doctor. Dr. Jimmy, he actually had his own radio show, internet radio, back in 2003, 4, 5. We were out there, and there are some really great people that I used to work with, that we spent time with, that the stories of UFOs, a story about paranormal, a story about, different things that were bumping the night, so to speak. And this is what we're trying to do, is tell the story, and people are on the edge all the time. So today, it's there's a lot more shows. There's a lot more shows available for a lot of people to tell their story. And it's a wonderful thing to do. I mean, I really do love it. And mind you, there's right now today, there has been so many discerning or concerning stories right now regarding the protests here in Canada and probably across the world regarding one specific thing. And it's gone, it's put itself now into a very scary situation. This is kind of interesting. Last night, I decided to watch a movie that I haven't seen. I've got a video of it. And I'm sure you guys remember the movie Avatar. And it's, if you remember correctly, in the movie Avatar, talks about how the military wanted a specific rock. And this rock apparently is worth billions. And the rock is located under this specific tree that where the Avatar people are living. And so they'll go out of their way as much as they can to say they can do whatever they want, take what they want, do harm, even if as far as to kill people if they had to. But they were going to take it no matter what. This had such similar story to it. I'm hoping it doesn't turn itself into that direction, where we would end up having militarized police and go as far as having to kill people for land. Because this is exactly what this is so similar is going to happen. I hope not. It doesn't happen that way. But we have so many people out there now are so sensitive. Whether they want to speak out, whatever you think you're right or wrong, and they're expecting you to be a follower of the Wet'suwet'en people or Wet'suwet'en territory. Or if you are not wanting to participate, you supportively on the other side and saying, you know, they shouldn't be blockading and that sort of thing. It comes to the point where you're stuck in the middle. You don't want people to get hurt. So, you know, there's so many things that are happening out there across this land right now. And it's getting to be, you know, I thought United States at times has its issues where, you know, there was a lot of violence that took place in the Lakotas when the pipeline came in there all over sacred burial sites. And yet now it's here. And it's harmful. It's hurting our people. It's hurting because myself being an indigenous person, it's hurting everyone. And I don't like to see people get physically hurt. I don't like to see people hate each other over all this. Yes, we all have rules of trying to be civil, but for some reason, a government wants to control, and they want to be in control, and that reminds me of a little bit more like Avatar. It's gets to be heartbreaking. And mind you, it's kind of a romance in the Avatar where the guy falls in love with the girl and who's the leader, but I don't know who that girl and guy is that's actually part of that, you know, other side of it here in Canada that's dealing with Wet'suwet'en. Mind you, I think it's more like a passion because you're just wanting to feel that you need to protect. But here's the thing. The reason why I'm bringing this up, because our extraterrestrial people are people that they're called the protectors of our planet. The Anunnaki is who I work with. And they, like, again, these are people in 8, 9, 10 feet tall, even taller, you know, generations, thousands of years ago. And they live for thousands of years. And we are part of the creation. We are those half-breeds. And I have no animosity of feeling the word of, I don't feel painful of the word, hearing the word a half-breed, because to me, that's a compliment, you know, that I'm acknowledged by both sides of my family. But what I do am concerned about is I don't like to see people get hurt. And, you know, we need to be more spiritual sometimes. We need to, I mean, yeah, our prayers are out there to support Wet'suwet'en people that are fighting. We also need to get those other prayers out there to see if we can stop even other viruses from, you know, going out there too, because we've got all these things happening all across the world. And the star beings are trying to say is we need to start spending some time together and start working with each other as a community and not being so negative and hateful and spiteful And you know, that's the reason why I've been doing radio for so many years. And I work at another radio station. I have a show called Métis Matters Radio. And I talk about issues that are happening in the Métis community and our issues, and you know, that's all shared with our public and our listeners. And I work at a station called CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio downtown Vancouver. It's been around, like, I've with Métis Matters Radio has been going on since 1989. Now, the fellow who actually was the original show host passed away a little over 2 years ago. His name was Ken Fisher. And they asked me if I could carry on his program. And I just said, well, if I do, you know, let me do it my way. And I've had a lot of years experience in radio broadcasting. So they believed in me. And so far, it's been very successful because I give everybody the benefit of the doubt. Never, I give everybody the both sides of their story. I want them to speak from both sides, you know, not just one-sided only. And yet you're going to come across people that like to be one side and say, no, this is the only way. And no, you got to compromise, guys. You got to find some feelers out there and find out, let's talk about why. Let's go, let's talk about this person. Let's talk about this question, why, and see if we can fix it somehow, right? We need to sit down and look it over. It's almost like having to have, you know, no one has any power to tell you what to do. They're just saying to you, here's what we can do, or here's what we, you know, here's a proposition. But for some reason now, our country is losing its propositions. They're no longer sitting wanting to sit with you. Now they're saying, oh, we're going to control this. Well, what has happened? And I'll tell you why. The Anunnaki were that way before. They got to the point where they were wanting to be in control of everything. And they had humankind. They used the men as the slaves. They use the women to be the carriers of the water or anything else as necessary. And yet, through that time, there were actually some young daughters of the Anunnaki that fell in love with some of the men, and they carried their children, they carried their babies, and it went even a little bit further, where the compromise was, well, we need to have compromise here. You can't just get rid of that guy because she fell in love with him, you know? And a little bit of like an avatar, right? Big person, little person. I think that's where James Cameron actually made that movie. It was based on maybe something similar to the avatar, to the Anunnaki. But it's so familiar, so similar to some of the stories. I mean, I love the work, the camera work, and I mean, I hope there's great success in all this. But the thing, like I said before, we need to get more. We need to reach out. We need to get more connected with the rest of the world and say, you know, what can we do to fix this? How can we fix this? And you know, if you guys have politicians in your territory, whether it's across Canada, United States, Europe, you name it, if you know you have a way that you can actually try and get your politician, your local MLA or MP to sit with you, or to arrange some sort of a meeting and say, here's what we can do. You got to do it. I mean, there's only certain parts that people can to deal with as far as protesting is concerned. We have our country now here, I'm living in British Columbia, but we have a premier in Alberta, Jason Kenney. And now what Jason Kenney wants to do, he wants to pass a bill that would be illegal to protest about anything. He wants to get that bill passed, and he's trying it in Alberta first. And if you actually are protesting, whether it's a pipeline, protesting over water, protesting over whatever you want to protest against, he wants to put you in jail, and you are charged. You can be doing between 6 months to 5 years. He wants to make it where he could turn it to a federal offense, and I think this is absolutely ridiculous. But this is because these politicians are getting scared, and I'll tell you why. Because the humankind, the young ones like yourselves, are getting stronger and more vocal. And you're standing up and you're saying, no more. You know, I mean, I'm one of the original people that actually started, there was many of us here in the BC region that started Idle No More. I'm one of the people in the Langley region in the Fraser Valley area. We are actually one of the people that started Idle No More 6-7 years ago. We did it because we felt it was right. We felt that we need to protect and protect our waters. That was the important part. And even the Anunnaki would tell you, your water is the most important thing in the world. If you don't have the water, if you don't have the bees, you're not going to make it. You got to have the bees. We are losing our bees. And that's something that needs to be looked at and we need to be very concerned about, because and we're losing our nature. You know, when you start digging the ground so much, when I was shown from Real, he showed me some more things before I went to Laughlin, and I could communicate with him. And he told me, he said, what you don't realize, he said, the earth is a human, like earth, the earth, our planet is like, it's real. It's a living thing. And it has its own veins. I mean, you think about it, you know, we have veins in our body and it's a life source, right? And yet when we're, if you look at the ground, if you keep on digging it deeper and deeper and deeper in one spot, deeper and deeper, and you're using it to flush out whatever you want to flush out and you want to do damage to it, it causes earth tremors, right? And when it causes earth tremors, it shakes things up. Basically, you're taking the life source out of the earth, which is so close to the earth's core. You don't want to do that. And these companies, corporate businesses, don't realize how much damage they're doing, because we're living on a living source. And what the Anunnaki told me, they said we need to be extra careful, because they also made mistakes themselves. They knew what they did wrong. Now, how is it that our humankind's repeating it? Because these are the cell memories of those people that actually had made us, that we are carrying their memories of what happened to them, and what they did was wrong at times. Nobody was ever perfect, okay? Nobody was ever perfect. But if you ever decide to look up the story about the Anunnaki, just really do the research. And I haven't until I thought, you know what, maybe I'm going to start looking up about the Anunnaki, what their real history is about, because I had no idea. All I knew was Zial was part of my life, and they're on the Anunnaki, and that's it. But what he did say to me, he says, it's not the past that we need to be concerned about. It's the present, because who the Anunnaki once were back then were kind of like, again, controlling of humankind. They can do whatever they want, get away with it, because they're giants, right? Very tall people. Some stood for 25 feet, some even bigger. And yet we have a tendency of having to, we need to remember who we are as humankind. We need to be out there more often to really share a story. I mean, everybody in our family has a story to tell, right? As a parent, as a daughter, as a mother, as a sister, as a brother, as a cousin, as an uncle, a father. You know, like all these people are all important to us. And we all have a story to tell. Once upon a time. That's why we always use that one word when we were kids. Once upon a time. And once upon a time, when I was a kid, I did this. Once upon a time, when I knew someone, she or he did that. And that's what makes it perfect. It's a story. We're storytellers. Sometimes people love to make up stories to make it exciting, even more exciting. And I've always enjoyed telling stories. I've always enjoyed singing my songs. I'm a writer. I wrote a book, and I got more books to write. I'm working on more books as soon as I can settle my mind down and start getting things in order again. But I've been so busy traveling and doing my work, and, you know, it's wonderful. A person my age, you know, I'm in my 60s now, and I'm still love being young. I still love feeling that I'm still young, that young feeling. I don't want to feel like a person who could barely walk. I don't want to feel like a person that can barely talk. I want to feel like a person. I want to feel like I'm still living. And I almost lost my life over a week ago. I got choked. There was something lodged in my throat that wouldn't leave me, and it took an ambulance to show up to remove out of my throat. It was lodged in good, and they took it out. I had to realize after that I'd be more careful with myself, that, you know, you take things for granted. I wasn't afraid to die. I was mad. I was like, come on, you better not take me now, because I'm not freaking ready yet. And then this whatever it was happened. This guy showed up in the ambulance, the paramedic, and he knew how to get it out of me. And he just knocked it real hard. I mean, he hit me hard in my back and nailed it, and up it came. And that was, like I said, it was something was lodged in my throat. It was part of one of my pills that I was taking, but it was two. I guess there was two went down at the same time, but somehow with the water, the moisture adding more water, they fused together, and it caused a clogging of my throat that I couldn't swallow. And the more I was trying to swallow more water, I was drowning myself up in here into my voice box and into my oxygen. And that's where I was beginning to choke. And I thought I was going down for the count. I kept telling my wife, I'm not sure if I'm going to be here that long. And like I was trying to say something, and then the ambulance driver came out. And I felt like this guy was a running angel, you know, bang on my back, and everything came up the way I wanted to. But I had a hell of a time. It wasn't just immediately. It took about 5 or so minutes to get it finally out of my throat. And then my throat got hurt. I mean, it was sore for a long time. I mean, I had to be really extra careful about swallowing things when I was up in Nevada, and I had to be careful what food I was eating because, you know, it was all scratched out. And so it took a while, and I'm back to my old self again. But again, like I said, I mean, we take life in, we take things we take things as to an advantage. We think, you know, we're invincible. We can be if we want to be. If you want to feel invincible, that's fine. But I'm still here. And I don't tend to leave in this world yet. I got things to do, and I know I do. When I was 16, Spirit came to me and asked me if I wanted to leave, you know. And I remember seeing Jesus in the garden. Honest to God, I did. I was not a kid that went to church, ever went to church in my life. And I was actually working in my mom's garden doing some hoeing. And this beautiful light came across me, and next thing you know, there was this man that appeared on the garden. He was talking to me. He says, "Hello, Derek. How are you today?" And I said, "Good." And for some reason, he knew I knew who he was, but it was surprising to me to see him. And then he just says to me, "You know, you're done here. You don't have to stay here anymore. If you want to leave, you can. You're finished here." And I said, "No, I want to stay. I really want to stay. For some reason, something in my heart saying, you got to stay." And he said, "Well, if you want to stay, then we're going to need you in the future." And I said, "Okay." And I stayed. I went through a car accident after, and I had my near-death experience. I mean, I rolled my car. I shouldn't have survived it. But after that, my life changed, completely changed. And that's where parts of it began. Where I became, I acted like a different person. Again, being 16, you're invincible, but when you hit 18 and you thought you could do whatever you want, you find out later what it's like to be who you are. We're all human beings, and we all need to learn lessons, and that's myself. I've always been a person to learn lessons. I love learning lessons, learning things every day. I felt a little frustrated with myself even before I started today. I was a little late coming on because normally I come on at 6 o'clock and it's 7:30 now. But Mina, it was interesting. When I saw Jesus, I saw everything about him. In fact, I was crying, literally in tears. I was on my knees. I fell to my knees, and I remember him putting his hand on my head, and he says, "He's blessed thy child, for you shall do great things." And I lost it. And even just thinking about it right now gives me the shakes. I mean, wonderful things. Some people say, "Well, how come you don't talk about him much?" I do. I talk about him when I want to. You know, he's not a secret. And then many years, people will say to me, "Well, you ever heard about the second coming of Christ?" And I go, "Oh, yeah, he'll be showing up one day when he needs to." But second coming does not mean everybody. My belief is he will show up for those who are needing him. That means we all will have a visit from him. Somehow he'll always be there. It's not just everybody all at once. Because how is it? Here's one thing I get a kick out of. I saw this photograph, this cartoon of Jesus being lowered out of a spaceship. And I thought, this is so hilarious. And so I put the word ta-da above him, and I put it on my Facebook page. You know, it's like saying, ta-da, here I am. You figure that out, right? You got to have some humor. But a lot of people even now said, you know, is Jesus an alien? You know, is he connected to the Anunnaki, or is he part of that? I wouldn't doubt it. You know, I wouldn't doubt it. He's part of something. He's part of another part of the world, because everyone asks the questions, you know, do aliens believe in Jesus and God? Yes, they do. Some don't. Little green guys, you know, because they'd never met him probably. Some are actually, but in time, they're all going to find out eventually. Every part of the world is going to learn something about God or the gods, learn about spirit. And that's what I do. I've learned so many things, and like I said, I'm still learning. And yes, Char, I did see his eyes, and it was so, that's what I said, I look at his eyes and I start to cry. I mean, literally, it's very, having to look at him, he could see through my soul. He made me feel like I was so valued in this world. He made me feel like I was needed, that I was worthy, I was, you know, important, I was everything that most people are asking to fulfill their dream and their life. And to, you know, everyone has a dream. And one thing I learned about a good lady friend of mine who's been gone now for the last couple of years, but her name is Barb Leonard. And Barb actually had a wonderful dream one time, and she said that spirit came to her, and she said, they said to her, God has a dream for me. And I thought, that is one heck of a quote. You know, God has a dream for me, because God's dreaming of you, what you do. You know, like he sees, or he or she sees what you do. And I thought it was pretty cool. Because what we want, what we are asking for, what we're expecting to have one day in our lives, it's going to happen, you know. And even to this day. And he's visited me twice. He visited me when I was 8, visited me when I was 16. And when I was an 8-year-old, it's a little different. I mean, as an 8-year-old kid, you're just a kid. And he came to see me when I was 16. Didn't see him after that. Now I do. He may come and see me before I leave this world. But, you know, this is what I get a kick out of. When you got your priests running around and telling you, especially when you go to see someone who's given them their last rites, whether it's in the hospitals or by their bed, and the priest will say, well, no one's ever seen God except, you know, they don't have, no one else has the right to see God except them. And I said, really? How would you feel if I did tell you that I saw him? And the first thing they'll say to you, you're crazy. You know, like, really? And thank you, Lori. Yeah, I'm glad that you saw him when you're 7 years old. Like I said, there's a reason why, you know, they're going to come and see you for a reason. There's a reason for the visit. It's not just, oh, hi, how are you? You know, they're not, how are you doing? They've come to see you, see how you're doing. You are important. People don't think about this, but, you know, this is a little bit like time. It's like time is like a little tiny molecule. And a molecule is like a little speck of sand, okay? And even the molecule is even smaller than that piece of sand. We are that sand. Each of us is like two little pieces of sand on the beach. We populate. The sand, the beach starts to spread up more. We get more and more out there. But you think about this. Time is so fast, but who controls time? Do I control time? Or does God control time? Well, I can tell you a story, folks, how time stopped for me, really. I want to also share my story about another lady friend of mine. Her name is Shirley Klein-Karsh. She was also a person who actually worked with the extraterrestrials many years ago when she was in her 40s. She was 93 when she passed away. And when I met Shirley, when I had first having my meetup with the extra, with Anunnaki, and then a couple months later, when I told my story, a couple lady friends of mine actually asked me if I wanted to come to a UFO conference in Cloverdale here in BC. And I said, how much is it going to cost? And they said, well, the tickets are about $50, but it's, you know, I said, well, I'm not going to pay that. And they said, well, it's your birthday. We'll pay for it. Come along with us. Okay. Well, thank you, ladies, for even paying it for me. I really appreciate it. So they took me to the conference and went in there. The hall was full of people. Like, it was packed. And I was in the second row. And I'm listening to some people. There, you know, there were doubters in there, you know, typical doubters. And there are sometimes are making some of them are making jokes about what when Shirley was telling her story, what happened to her, you know, being a person that was on the ship, and she had her share of meeting up with UFOs. But hers was different. Her story was different. And she says that these extraterrestrials have a way of helping her to control. Pardon me, how to control the room. This is an energy I'm just taking in right now. How to control the room. And which Shirley had done whenever people, I mean, I'm looking around, I can see people laughing at her and joking in there. You know, it's fine. You can have fun with it. But suddenly I hear bees, the sounds of bees, you know, like as if you're inside of a beehive. And I was getting louder and louder and louder. And next thing you know, I look around and the whole room was quiet, absolutely quiet. And everybody was in a freeze frame, like literally like this, like, and they're not talking. It was like, and they're moving this way, you know, like a freeze frame room, like as if you took your TV controller and went pause. Okay. That's exactly what happened. I'm looking around, the bee sound stopped. I'm looking around, I'm seeing all these people, like they're frozen, like nothing happening. I look up on the stage to see Shirley, and she turned towards me and she says, are you Derek? And I said, yes. And she says, I need to meet you after this is over. Can we meet up? I said, sure. And she waved her hand like this, and everything went back to normal again. She stopped time. Okay. Wow. And I knew that she was for real. I got to meet with her and I got to know her more. And she was given these small little plates. They look like credit card size, so to speak, and sort of like a bronzy, brass, goldy color. And there was eight of them, but I didn't get to hold all eight. But she wanted me to decipher the six of them. Now, here's how that worked out. Back in the late 1960s, she was, in her thoughts, when she was a passenger in her husband in her family car with her husband, and he was driving, and they're in Vancouver downtown, off Broadway, and then suddenly, Shirley says, "Stop! I need to get out. You need to drive somewhere. Whatever, just go over. I gotta go to the store." Shirley walks into this store across the street. And it's like a pawn shop, but it's not a pawn shop, like a secondhand store. She walks in, looking around, just not knowing why she's there. And the guy says to her, "It's about time you got here, Shirley. We have something, we need to talk to you." And she says, "Do I know you?" She goes, "Nope. But we know you." And the same thing happened to me. This is the reason why, to me telling you my story, where the Anunnaki knew me. But how do you guys know me? We know you because we've actually been taking you since you were a kid. But anyways, for Shirley, I got to know her. And they told her that she will meet a man that will help her decipher those cards after they gave them to her. But they all had hieroglyphics on them. And there's no way you can read those. Now, mind you, those hieroglyphics could have meant something to someone who can actually read Egyptology possibly. But every time I kept trying to take a picture of the, like I was going to take a photograph, the words would move, like all the hieroglyphs, they'd move, like as if it's like it's like a 3D. But it kept moving. It was never, and every time I take a picture, it blur. And I go, like, okay, this is not working. So there's something about those cards that made it really important. And anyways, but she got me to hold them, and I found a way to hold them. Oh, before I go further than that one, they told her that she would meet up someone who actually would help her decipher them. Like I maybe mentioned that already. I had to wait, or she had to wait for me to meet her for almost 50 years for me to decipher her cards. That was freaking weird, just thinking about it. So that's how it works. I mean, the thing is that spirit has a way, or extraterrestrials have a way to make predictions, right? And, or they're going to show you something's going to happen in the future. And that's exactly what happens. We basically think that we have one thing happening for our, in our lives that's going to be so important now, we don't realize it's going to happen maybe 10, 20 years from now. And so when I'm game, same thing with Zael, he showed me some things that were going to happen. And yet he told me, like, basically they had a flat screen TV on their ship. And even when Shirley was when she met these guys in their store back in 64, she met those guys in the store, and they had a flat screen TV because she said there's a flat screen TV along the wall, and the guy was actually able to put his hand through the flat screen TV and pull out the cards. Like, he literally absorbed his hand through the screen and pulled out the cards. I mean, it's kind of really science fiction-y, but that's exactly what she believed because she's seen it, witnessing with her own eyes. And he told her there are many things that these extraterrestrial people could do. And they were in human form, but they took human form because this is how we understand them. But originally, the planet itself, that's not human form. They're different looking. And if they did show us their true form, we would be freaking out, running around like, oh my God, go crazy, right? So that's what they do. And extraterrestrial beings, you folks don't realize that at our conference, I knew that there were actually a few extraterrestrial beings there that acted different, looked different at our conference. But they came specifically for a reason, not just for me, but they came to see all of us. And what I found out later, they were appreciative that we were talking about them and that we're supporting what they were doing. We were very telling our stories, what we all experienced. There's 30 of us, 30 speakers in this event that when I was in Laughlin, Nevada. And it was a long week. It was an eight-day conference. Now, the great Jordan Maxwell was there. I've interviewed him a few times, and wonderful fellow, but I never got a chance to see him in person, like literally physically in person. And so I got to meet him in person for the first time. Very tall man, but had the biggest heart in the world. Like, he loves people. This man had 60 years experience in this field, not just about UFOs, but he is also himself was a person who actually, his first girlfriend was an alien, and she introduced him to her father, who actually was an alien, and they were from another planet, and he got to experience her himself being on the ship. Yeah, it all happened. Like, I mean, why would Jordan lie? And he misses this woman, even to this day, he misses her. Now, why they weren't together? I think it's all to do with his. He had to be the storyteller. He had to share it with the rest of the world about what's going on. And I think the world, and I remember him saying the world, or them telling him that the world is not ready for extraterrestrials to be met. And if it was, then they would actually, if they did come in and try to work with people or sit, you know, get to know all of us, the government would try to dissect them, so to speak. They would try to, you know, why are you here for? And they would want to know everything that they have knowledge of, and they would want to, you know, control that and to be make it more militarized and actually peaceful. And so that's why, like I said, beginning my program on this show, we need to learn to become more peaceful and to work together as a community, because it is important. I've worked very hard to teach, you know, in my skills and even my cultural learnings. I do drum workshops. I'm a crafter. I'm a singer. Healing circles I used to hold. I travel everywhere, and being as a counselor as well. So I've got many skills. And being a UFO experiencer, and that's. But to me, it was fun. I mean, I've always enjoyed it. I've never liked to make a big issue about it. You know, like, oh my God, you know, just see this. Like, no, I mean, there are a lot of people out there that are experiencers. Some people will take it more advantage of it. Me, I'm okay. I'm okay with it. But I just want to let you folks know that, you know, myself, and there's many others like yourself, I'm sure, that you're going to go through an experience, you're going to have your first extraterrestrial experience, and if you haven't, you will. Or if you have, some of you actually kept it to yourself. And I know that you have kept it to yourself. Sometimes you may wake up in your vehicle and you don't know where you were. You know, sometimes you'll lose time in your life. And many people come up to me and said, I lost some time and I don't know where I lost it. You know, somehow I remember driving down the road. Next thing you know, I'm waking up on the side of the highway somewhere and wearing somebody else's pajamas, or, you know, that's what happens, right? So, and I've had clients that called me on that. There, a couple of young girls were driving to work, and this is going between Abbotsford and Chilliwack on the highway. They're driving on the highway, and next thing you know, they remember it being midnight, and they're wearing someone's pajamas. But yet, when they get home, they look themselves, observe themselves in a mirror, they got markings on their bodies. So how can that ever happen? How are they able to be taken in front of the public? They don't know. All they know is they were taken. And yet they were never hurt. They were never tortured. They were never harmed, you know, in a negative way. Some people did have a negative experience. Maybe sometimes they didn't like look at their faces and they get scared. I've met some people who've actually had some very traumatic experiences with them, being examined. Sometimes some of them were scarred. And I met a few women that were at the UFO conference, that one young lady had four children taken from her, and she couldn't figure out why she could never get pregnant. Like physically pregnant by the guy, is because she'd been on that ship so many times that the doctor said, whatever you're doing to yourself, you shouldn't stop it. He told her he should stop having these abortions. She's never had an abortion in her life. But for some reason, the babies are taken before she gets pregnant. You know, before she's ready to say, I want to be pregnant, or going to be pregnant, or want to have a baby. To this day, she's never been able to. So, but what I had to do for her, to comfort her, to let her know that these experiences that she could not have a baby in this physical world, she's got four babies of her own that are extraterrestrial in another world, and that she's helping to populate a planet that needs children. You know, may not know which planet, but they're populated. And one day she's going to meet them, because many times there's times that they won't hide the child from you. They'll want, you know, if you really want to see your child, you know, if you've actually been abducted that way, and if you want to see your child, ask. They don't mind. They're just thinking that you may be upset the fact that they took the child from you. Or at times, and also there's guys out there that are fathering. You know, you may father to help populate too. You know, it's not just one-sided. I met women that actually said that there's a guy they were dating, and next thing you know, she has a dream, or she thinks she's having a dream that the guy's having sex with her, but yet when she wakes up, there's no guy there. And yet he thinks that he had the same kind of dream as her. And the next day he goes, I don't know why, but I had a dream about you. Me, you and I are making love. And yet, and she goes, yeah, I did see that too. Because you guys are on the ship. You never know. It's not always a dream. But they'll make it like as if you're having a dream. But that's why these things can happen. And I've learned a lot through the years, even helping people dealing with their past lives or past life regression, or even experiencer regressions, to see if they were taken, you know. And but when they learn to open up more about themselves, they feel better, you know. And sometimes it means, like I said, sometimes it may feel scary or disrespectful. Like basically some people say, how dare you took a child from me, you know. And again, did we have a birth contract with them? Did we have an earth contract with them that we agreed that they're going to take the baby? Or did somebody else have the contract that's governed over you and saying, oh yeah, well, we signed the contract with these extraterrestrial beings and we gave up a million people of earth so those people could be taken and be observed and the government's not doing nothing about it. And they won't. But yet, they'll pass a law in both of these countries, Canada and the United States, that it's illegal to communicate with an alien. Yes, it's a law, folks. It's a law. It's illegal to communicate with an alien, but yet how can you prove it unless there's a photo op with an alien next to you like, hey, let's do this. Let's do a photo op with an alien. But if the military sees that or some sheriff sees that, are you going to go to jail because you're with an alien? I don't think so. I don't know. Anyways, sometimes these things can happen. It's crazy. But it's kind of funny. You think about it. Anyways, I thought we'd just share that some of the stuff with you folks. And but if you guys ever actually go through experience like this yourself, if you have any kind of extraterrestrial experience, I'd love to hear from you. And just, you know, leave it with you. Like I said before, when I was at the UFO conference, it was great. I did my presentation there. The people loved it. It was my first in my presentation, well, my experience. It was a 2-hour presentation. Time flew fast. Holy crap. Like I didn't realize, you know, each person is given about 2 hours. That's including a question and answer as well. But I opened up with a song. I used my hand drum, and I wanted to do it traditionally, and I did, and it was fun. Now, if you guys are ever interested in wanting to, maybe if you want to buy a copy of my presentation, you can always contact the UFO Mega Conference. It's actually on Facebook, and if you want to order any of the DVDs or maybe some people you may know of, like say Johnny Enoch or myself or somebody else, you can always place an order and they can actually mail them to you. The CDs or DVDs are, where's my DVD? Where are you guys? Okay, here it is. This is the DVD. Okay, it'll look like that. Now, in that way, you can see it. Okay. And it says the Laughlin UFO Mega Conference and has my name on it. And my title of it is called Visions and Visitations. And it's for the second annual Laughlin UFO Mega Conference. So you can order these. Okay. And I'll turn this camera around just a little bit for you guys to see. That's it right there. Okay. So if you want to order that DVD, you can also contact the guys from there. And you never know, you might want to have one of your own to watch, but it's very informative, and it'll show you my life experience and what I went through. How do they go through walls? Char's asking. There is a way of them doing it. They have a, mind you, I don't know, but there's a way. I mean, in us being humans, The DVDs are $10 plus shipping. But the as far as they go through, do they go through walls? How do they go through walls? It's somehow they're able to take the molecules of our body and we can absorb right through. And I remember them taking me through the wall. I mean, I didn't go right through the wall, but I don't remember even going through the wall. I remember looking out the window. Next thing you know, I'm outside my house. That's how quickly it goes. So us humans, they know how to do it. We absorb through it, come through, and we're on the ship. Then we're back in again in our house. But somehow they know how to do it. And they've been doing it for thousands of years. So we're not the first time for me. And apparently they've been taking me quite a few lifetimes. And I just don't remember it until – I guess they knew that I got used to it and I wasn't scared. I mean, myself, I was enjoying – I was enjoying the ride being on that planet, man. I'm telling you, it was like it was not like our Earth. It's way different, very futuristic. I mean, I didn't see no vehicles on wheels. There's no wheels. All I saw, everything was levitating off the ground. That's all I remember being on the ship when they dropped me off from the ship. I remember seeing the inside, the circulation, how it moved and how it sounded. Never forget that day. It was. I just my memory's there, and like I told people, I'll put me on a lie detector, and I'll do it. You give me a lie detector, you put me on it, and I'll do it, and I'll tell you exactly what I saw. Not a dream. I was wide awake because my wife was there, and she's seen them. She seen me, and I'm not sure if any other people watch, but apparently, what I've been told, there are other people that actually have gone through the same experience, and there's another man actually who has been taken like myself. He's from France, and he actually was taken by the same guys. Him and I met up a couple years ago, and we did not know of each other's existence until when he heard my story from Johnny Enoch, and then he asked me if he could come outside and have a chat with me about regarding my situation, and then we made comparisons of our stories, and me looking at his and him reading me, and I thought, holy crap, so similar. So both of us actually had the opportunity to be on that trip. So it was kind of interesting. So anyways, him and I don't stay often in communication with each other because, you know, I got my life and he's got his. So, but he's always out there doing his own thing. I'm out there doing mine. If any of you guys are interested and wanted to get that DVD, you're more welcome. Just give those guys a call and they'll mail them to you. It's worth your while. Even Johnny Enoch's presentation is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. It'll just floor you. anybody else, I would say? I don't know. I don't think so. I think you're pretty good. So, pardon me. I just got over my my cold, so my throat. Slightly dry. The funniest part of my trip, before I finish this off, when I was coming from Laughlin, Nevada, I got to Vegas, and we're leaving. I'm on the plane, and we're still sitting on the plane for a freaking long time. And we're on the airfield, and there's a whole bunch of planes behind us, all lined up, like 20 planes. And they're all lined up, and some are in front of us, and there's others behind me. So I decided to record it in the window. I'm recording all the planes, and then I put it on Facebook, right? I get home, and I found out later the reason why all those planes are lined up because Donald Trump was in the airport, and he would not allow anybody to leave the airfield until he left first. So he delayed our trip for 2 hours. So I finally got my plane. I mean, I thought I was going to be late to get my plane when I got to Calgary because we had to make two stops, one to Calgary and then from Calgary to get back here. But it was it was kind of nerve-wracking because I didn't know how that was going to work, but I did get home. It's amazing how a president can actually shut everything down just because and they said no other president's ever done that before. So I just found it funny, absolutely hilarious that he stopped everything and we're all lined up like ants, you know, ready to take off. Okay, now it's your turn. It was funny. I couldn't believe it. Mind you, when I got there, actually going to the event, I got to tell this to you guys too before I forget. When we were coming in for a landing to Las Vegas, we had two UFOs, one on each side, large, sparkling UFOs on each side, coming in with us. We were coming in for landing. And I said, oh, look, we have an escort. Pretty cool. Both sides. And everybody's going like, oh, that's just light reflection. No, it's not. There's no freaking light reflection. You're freaking crazy. You know, people that are coming into Vegas for the first time, others that are from there, oh, yeah, we've got UFOs in the airfield all the time. But like I said before, I did my night watch with the night glasses, and it was fun as all heck. If you guys ever want to see anything that I do that I recorded, go have a look on my Facebook page and review some of it. It was worth it. Had a lot of fun. Anyway, guys, I love you and leave you, and you guys take care of each other, and I'll talk to you guys next week, next Thursday at 6 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern, and 9 o'clock Eastern. And I'll see you guys. Take care of each other. And yeah.
For monumental savings, pick Papec Honda. Shop our incredible selection with over 1,100 new Hondas available. Pick a new 2020 Accord Sedan LX CVT. Lease for just $249 a month. 36 months, zero security deposit. Pick Papec Honda today. Visit us at 11151 US 49 in Gulfport. Or shop online anytime at PapecHonda.com. Stock number LA052085-1, 12,000 miles per year. $2,099 down payment, tax and fees extra. Unapproved credit through HFSC dealer for details. Ends 3220.
Spring is just around the corner, and now's a great time to get in the driver's seat of that new John Deere you've been dreaming of when you shop with your neighbors at SunSouth. Whether you're cutting, disking, planting, or harvesting, think SunSouth, where you'll find the quality John Deere equipment to meet your needs, affordably priced to save you time and money. Like the fast and efficient John Deere Z915E zero-turn mower as low as $109 a month. And if you need to tackle larger jobs, think SunSouth for the John Deere 3025E package, including tractor, trailer, loader, box blade, and rotary cutter for as low as $285 a month with 0% financing available. Come see how easy it is to own a John Deere when you visit SunSouth. For a full line of affordable John Deere equipment to get your outdoor jobs done faster and more efficiently, think SunSouth for those that do.
Pricing plus taxes and fees. Financing with approved credit. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details. Expires March 7, 2020.